Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you again for joining us. Thank you again for visiting our sponsors and supporters. Let them know that you heard about them on the Wake Up Call Show. We're going to go a different way. First thing I've got to say is Mary's sick today. But I'm Bob Griswold.
I'm Kim Fink.
Alan Harrop.
Pat Park.
Russ Bauer.
Glenn Fink.
Welcome, everybody, and hopefully we, my real problem today is normally I say, hey, Mary, where are we going from here? So I don't know what to say now, but I know right now I'm going to say, Pat, you're going to take us off to...
I'm always happy to speak. Thank you. I read an article yesterday that tickled me. It was about our representative, Virginia Fox. She got a letter from a fourth grader. Asking why North Carolina wouldn't support $5,000 rebates. And I was surprised that a fourth grader knew the word rebate and what it meant. $5,000 rebate on the purchase of an electric vehicle. And, of course, he was the son of a liberal mom. And Virginia Fox wrote him a letter back that basically said that $5,000 would be taxpayer money, and it's not fair to take some taxpayer money and pay people who can afford to buy an electric vehicle by making the people who can't afford to buy one pay the $5,000. And she said EVs, I think something to the effect of EVs weren't a priority for North Carolina. And that maybe he ought to be careful of being propagandized by his teachers. And his mother had a meltdown.
Went to the school board with it.
Did he?
That's my impression.
Why? Virginia Fox doesn't answer to the school board. How stupid.
Well, she wants an apology.
Well, she can...
She can what?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I'm going to censor myself.
You said you'd like to talk.
I do. and I would, but I'm smart enough not to admit in front of the sheriff that I was speeding.
I can neither confirm nor deny that happened.
Okay. Alan, you had a different article on a Second Amendment.
Yeah, yours. This is something that happened in Virginia, of all places. You know, Virginia's been taken over by the Democrats with Spanberger there. Governor who came in running as a moderate and now has shown her true colors and is way out in left field, like most Democrats. And anyway, what happened was they passed a law in Virginia that seriously restricted the Second Amendment. And that included things like a ban on assault weapons. And they defined assault weapon as any semi-automatic that looks like it might be an automatic. In other words, you know, the M15s and, you know, all those weapons that a lot of people are buying now.
Lawyers would have fun with that.
Well, they're not just restricting it to that. I know a little bit about this because my son is moving from New Orleans, where he's going to school now, and it's constitutional carry down there, and he's likely going to end up in Virginia since he's Navy and is probably going to end up there. And so he's been looking into it, and they also define any weapon with a 17-round or larger magazine as being an assault weapon.
Yeah,
so technically a handgun, under their characteristic, is an assault weapon.
Yeah.
So, that's a violation of the Heller case.
Yeah, you know, it's just
they also have
insane.
They also have put in place a ban on what they call ghost guns. A ghost gun is a gun that is assembled from the components by the individual owner. If you have that, that's called a ghost gun. I guess they call it a ghost gun because it's not traceable because it does not have a single serial number that traces the weapon. Is that correct?
Right.
Lower receivers that aren't.
All right. Okay.
The serial.
The third thing they did was they instituted a red flag laws throughout Virginia, which make more stringent, making it easier for someone to complain about a gun owner and say, well, this person's doing so and so, and you have to prove that you're not whatever they're accusing you of. In the meantime, they can come take your gun.
Well, they're taking your firearms in advance before any hearing, before any...
Or you need is an accusation. You have an accusation.
It's months and months and months before you get that hearing.
Yeah, or they could put it off indefinitely. They also...
Some of the ridiculous things with a gun is everything is perceived by looks. I don't know if anyone's gone and looked at squirt guns lately, but there are an awful lot of squirt guns that look awful realistic. So I could see a whole lot of problems with people falling on.
Do you remember that case where the black kid got shot and
right,
killed?
Exactly.
Because he had a squirt gun that looked like a weapon, and he pointed it at the police officer.
Well, maybe the toy companies will get involved on this.
Well, the toy companies, I believe, had been painting the end of the barrel with an orange color.
This one didn't have the orange on it.
And somebody, you just got to magic marker that out?
Well, I don't think they painted it. I think it had a thing you could pull off.
I just saw a camo squirt gun, and it looked just like a regular Army kind of a rifle.
Yeah, well, the Army doesn't camouflage their weapons.
So the rest of the thing, requirements or restrictions in Virginia, is another one has to do with you only can purchase one handgun per month. So if you wanted to purchase more than that, you can't do it if you're a resident of Virginia and you're purchasing it in Virginia. I suppose you go out of state. And then they also have put in a series of storage mandates. Now, I haven't read what those are, but they're probably, you got to keep your weapon under lock and key, probably can't be loaded. All of the things that make it as a defense weapon pretty useless, mm-hmm. because by the time you go through all those rigmaroles to get your gun, the bad guy's got the drop on you. And it's not, I'm not bringing it up because of what Virginia did, although that's bad enough, but the two senators from Virginia have introduced the same restrictions as a federal bill in the Senate to extend what they've done in Virginia to the rest of the country. Now, I'm assuming we have enough, patriotic senators that wouldn't vote for something like this. However, I've been disappointed before. But it does show you where the Democrats would go if they took over the House and the Senate. That's why I'm bringing it up. These things they're doing in these states, they want to make everybody do it. It's not enough that they did it in Virginia. I didn't want to spread all these restrictions throughout the country. So,
well, luckily we have Trump, and he wouldn't sign that bill.
No,
and we also know how.
But what I'm saying, if they get the House and they get the Senate, Trump's not going to be there indefinitely.
Well,
it may be a time
for the midterms. Yeah, yeah.
And how successful has gun control been in Chicago? The criminals are always going to get the guns. This is going to punish the person who wants a personal defense opportunity.
Mm-hmm. That's always been the case.
But that's the case of a lot of the liberal policies. It's, policies through emotions as opposed to facts.
Right. I have an item to bring up. I read this morning that Governor Newsom is trying to turn San Quentin into a rehabilitation center. He's put a hold on executions. All of the death penalty guys are out of death row, and they've been sprinkled throughout the state to other prisons. He set up a program where all the prisoners, but particularly the death row guys, get a brand new tablet, and they can watch porn on it. And even though the state says they've put restrictions on it, the inmates that were interviewed said, yeah, well, we know how to get around that. And so they've also, but even worse, this one guy that's serving time for child abuse was able to contact the child abuse victim and made her stay on the tab, online with him for hours and hours at a time. He asked her for explicit pictures. He kept her on the phone, it said, until the jail phones closed at midnight, from the time she got home from school to midnight, grooming this kid. And so now they've had to charge him with new child abuse charges, and he's in custody awaiting trial on that. That's horrible. So that's what liberals, that's what they do to the criminal justice. And they call them, they don't call them criminals or inmates, they call them justice-impacted individuals. I mean, this is just parody. It's ridiculous.
Justice-impacted individuals. So we're that's just like where we can't call an illegal immigrant, an illegal immigrant.
An illegal alien.
Aliens, okay.
I still do.
You know, having worked in the North Carolina Department of Correction for many years, when I first started and throughout my career, inmates that were in close custody, they had different custody levels. They had maximum, close, medium, and then they had minimum. The ones in minimum were the ones that you see that were out working out on the roads, going out to work release, that kind of stuff. Okay. But the inmates in close and maximum custody, they weren't even allowed to make phone calls. They could make one phone call a year, and they would allow that around the holidays. And that phone call was monitored by one of the correctional officers to see what they're saying. The idea behind that was they didn't want these criminals coordinating with other criminals outside the prison about criminal activity they were planning, or maybe a prison break, who knows. But those are the restrictions. But like Pap's saying, it's gone so much with the liberal Democrats in the opposite direction. Now they're going to have freedom through those phones to communicate with anybody they want, anytime they want.
Mm-hmm. And watch porn. That just made me sick.
Yeah,
prison's supposed to be a punishment.
I don't care about that much.
It's supposed to, not supposed to be a spa.
It's not supposed to be a spa.
Tell the liberals.
I mean, there was a point in time where they were sentenced to go out there and break rocks and whatever else. And why? Because you get to break rocks.
Well, in New Mexico, when I was the district attorney, some of our criminals, we would send to an alcohol rehab, or and this one alcohol rehab, they had a stack of rocks. And you could either go to the rehab sessions or you could go outside and bang on the rocks. And one of the guys, he was in prison for trying to choke his wife. He refused to cooperate. So, you know, we violated and brought him back to court for a hearing. And he told the judge that he was too good to crack rocks. And the judge... Yeah. His sentence was suspended on condition that he complete this program. So he took the 9 years in prison and said, it's good to have choices, isn't it?
It's good to have choices.
That's the alcohol elimination program. If you're in prison for 9 years, hopefully you didn't get any alcohol.
Well, you can get alcohol in prison. They make their own.
Well, I don't remember what state it was in, but this week I heard on the radio one of the blue states where the overcrowding is now turned into they have vacancies in the prison.
Vacancies in the prison.
And that's a teaser because I want to talk about that when we come back from break.
Okay. Folks, on that, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
What's the largest gun shop in Craven County? If you said E70 Pond, you are correct. Since Drew got back from the most recent gun show, new guns have been pouring in faster than they can open the boxes. The large showroom at E70 Pond, slam bam, full of firearms. New guns and used guns, long guns and handguns. You will find weapons for self-defense, hunting, target shooting, and collectibles. The team at E70 Pond is friendly, courteous, and knowledgeable, especially in the area of guns. If E70 Pond doesn't have the gun you are looking for, they'll try to find it. If you want to do a gun transfer, E70 Pond will help you do it right. If you are looking to buy, sell, or trade a gun, there's no better place to do it than E70 Pond. Of course, E70 has tools, electronics, trolling motors, and a great selection of jewelry. But their specialty is guns. And we're talking hundreds of guns. Come see for yourself. E70 Pond, across from Craven County Fairgrounds, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
Around here, folks like to talk to each other, get to know you, look you in the eye, and see that you care. We call it the human touch. Whether you were born here or moved here really doesn't matter as far as we're concerned. You're from around here, and since 1905, folks like you have been calling folks like us for their auto, home, life, and business insurance. So come see us, or just give us a call, and we'll get you the best insurance protection possible at a real affordable price. We're Robinson & Stith Insurance, because when you really need help, you'll want somebody from around here.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back again. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Kim, you wanted to go?
Yeah, I wanted to stick with the criminal for a minute and the vacancy issues. During the COVID and since then, there's been early release programs from jail. And data is showing that almost half of the offenders who were released under Cooper's early release program have recommitted crimes, to include murder. So I just think that sometimes we get too much empathy and we start thinking with feelings and that so-and-so is not dangerous. But I just want to say that if you commit a crime, you need to do the time. And if we need to build more prisons, I think that's a better use of our funds than the sex life of a mouse.
Did you hear about the guy in Boston that went out with a long gun and was standing on the side of the highway just shooting? He shot off 60 bullets.
No.
He hit a couple of drivers.
Is in Cambridge.
The judge let him out early. He had a sentence. He was serving a sentence or something, and she let him out after 3 years. And he, you know, immediately reoffended.
You know, I want to add to this, just within this past week, I don't remember the name of the virus, but how many people were held incarcerated on shipboard because they were passengers. They were, quote, innocent passengers.
150?
Yeah, and that's another, there was another ship that apparently they suspected the virus. And again, they're incarcerating the folks on the ship.
They traced that to patient zero. He was on the ship. He had gone on a bird watching excursion and went to visit
a landfill
dump that was rats.
Rat infested.
Yeah.
but you look at, here's the people that have paid for a trip or some kind of pleasure trip or whatever else, and they're being quote incarcerated. And here we had a governor that during a COVID virus thing, he decided to let people out.
The Dems are using this to bludgeon Trump because we got out of WHO, the World Health Organization. So WHO is making a big to-do about the hantavirus. You know, Gene Hackman's wife died of hantavirus up in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Well, we're talking the criminal and the victim again. On the radio today, on the way here, we were listening to Clay and Buck, and they were referring to a 76-year-old man who was pushed down a flight of stairs and died. The offender had done this previously to a white woman who refused to press charges because she didn't want another black man to be in jail, and she was being empathetic with it. So I just want to refer back to what I said a minute ago. Our empathy and our feelings are impacting people's lives.
Well, I want to make just two points. One about sentencing. Having, again, worked in the Department of Correction, I interviewed a lot of inmates that were violent, in prison for violent crimes. And one of the things that was clear to me was you very rarely came across a first offender. In other words, you look at their background and their history. There are other instances of violence. It's not like a person goes, he's a law-abiding, moral person, and then he turns to a certain age and just becomes violent. That is very rare. It's quite the opposite. So letting these people out, what you are doing when you let these people out, those people have prior histories, and a prior history means they're going to do it again. The more prior histories they have, the more certain you can they're going to repeat it. And the other thing I want to just mention, just generally, as we're talking about the negative impact of what Democrat Governor Cooper did, people have to remember when they go to the elections this November, the gas prices may be up, but you got to remember all the negative things you're going to get if you change away from the administration we have now. And that's what you're going to go back to. And a lot of people say, it's all the gas price. You know, if that's where we are as a country, that we forget all the negative things done by other administrations because the gas price is high, and it's not as high as it was under Biden during his administration until he started releasing all the oil out of the oil reserves. He started just spreading that out. So I'm just saying, I hope that people will look beyond their pocketbook and look at what's best for the country.
And we need to go back to also the progressive theology of the open borders and what that has done in North Carolina as well as other states, not just with housing, but with jobs. There's fewer jobs available if you can get paid under the table to work in hospitality or in construction or in agriculture. You're taking that job away from an American. So housing, we've been talking about housing shortages. We've been talking about affordability. All of these things were impacted by the Democrat agenda and the open borders.
Mayorkas has been on the spot in the public being asked about the borders. And if you remember, he told us repeatedly that the border was secure under Biden.
Right.
And also, when Biden was president, the Dems defended him on the gas price by saying the president doesn't set the gas price. Well, apparently Biden didn't, but Trump does.
Oh.
And when they were saying that the borders were closed, they had
thousands
of people working their way in.
Yeah,
on just, TV,
just but, standing in big lines at the board at the gate.
Right.
Well, again, it's just the tip of the iceberg, right? Because you get into that, and that leads you into all the strain that was put on the social and welfare programs that were going to people who weren't paying taxes.
Schools.
You know, the impact on the schools or hospitals. You go into an emergency room nowadays, and you're sitting there, as I just did, and was in there 7 hours waiting to get seen. And you go beyond that now to all these fraud cases that they're finding and the drains that those are causing. You know, it's just a tremendous impact across the board.
Yeah, North Carolina just found out that autism treatment, Medicare for autism went from 1% or $1 million, that's what it was, $1 million to $660 million in about 5 years. Did you know there were that many autistic people living in North Carolina?
The good news is J.D. Vance is on it. He was having a news conference today, and hopefully they're going to gain some ground. I understand there's these electronic tools provided to look for fraud. And many of the states didn't even have those turned on or in use.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I hope the hammer comes down pretty hard.
Well, right now, what they're finding is mostly from the more conservative, quote unquote, red states, because they're turning over the data and the blue states are refusing to do that. So you don't even know what's there right now.
No, you don't.
Well, I want to know what North Carolina is doing about that fraud.
Well, I know that Dave Bolak is doing a great bang-up job.
I know Diane said she was at an event that he was at with the North Carolina Federation of Republican Women, and he was talking about arrests coming soon as a result of his auditing. So.
And, you know, not only arrests, and we're going to head off to the budget in just a second, but not only arrests, but he is going through various agencies, and he is finding inefficiencies and challenging them to change the way they do certain things, to make it efficient, more efficient, a better use of our money.
And we want where he was talking about getting this information about possibly leading to some criminal charges was Pilot Mountain up in the mountains. There's also information from Rocky Mount. They've had a lot of money that they have not been able to track. So, but his role, he cannot bring charges himself. He can share that information with prosecutors. And then the prosecutor, I guess it has to be the county prosecutor if it's something going on at that county.
Well, probably the level of charges.
Whatever level.
County,
whatever,
state,
you know,
whatever.
It's probably
the DAs have districts.
DA. And so whether the DA in Rocky Mount is part of the DA, part of the same political group or not, remains to be seen. But he is doing a lot to uncover this.
If there's a conflict with the DA, they can refer the case. They can ask the AG's office to take it over.
I think it also has to do with where the money comes from, because I think Medicaid is mostly federal money, but it's given out by the state, so...
Yeah, the state gets a block grant. Yeah, then they administer it.
Okay, Kim, you want to take us to this, and it's a great thing. Yesterday, Tuesday. Now we're recording on Wednesday. Yesterday, Tuesday, the North Carolina State House of Representatives and the Senate have come to some sort of tentative agreement on a budget for last year.
And
already.
And I think it's about time that they come to an agreement on this. And I know that there's been a lot of controversy over a lot of the pay raises, the anticipated pay raises. But the one that gets my undies in a bundle has to do with teachers and the teachers' pay. And I want to say outright, I don't think teachers get paid what they deserve for the good teachers. But I also want to say that the propaganda going on in the schools, where I'm hearing from parents saying that their students are coming home complaining about teacher pay, that has no place in the classroom. Politics like that is divisive and it has no place in the classroom. Number two, coming home from Raleigh yesterday, there's billboards out along the highway saying, you want quality education, pay the daggum teacher. Well, that leads me to two conclusions. One, we're not getting quality teachers because the pay's not high enough, so they're indicating that only stupid people are teachers. So I found that to be offensive just on the basis. And then number two, it sounds not a bribe. What's the word I want, Pat? I'm not going to do a good job because you're not paying me enough money.
You mean like a union member?
Well, like retribution, like, a retaliatory. I'm not going to teach you good because you're not paying
more than
me.
That. It doesn't sound educated.
No,
but it doesn't sound.
The point is,
yeah, dead gum.
In general,
at least they didn't say cotton picking. Mm.
Glenn and I have been following the school and the education budget closely for I'd say the last 12 years when Common Core first started, and the writing was on the wall then with a lot of these unfunded mandates that happened. But the teachers. Raises in the last 10 to 12 years have been by Republican House and Senate in North Carolina. It hasn't been under the Democrat control. It has been under the Republicans. So the thing about Republicans holding teachers' pay irritates me.
Well, and the only thing I'll tap that with is it says if this comes through the 8%, it will the starting teacher pay will be number one in the South, where some people are spreading misinformation about our place in the 50 states on that.
Folks, on that teaser, we're going to be right back and continue on this budget. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Round here, folks like to talk to each other, get to know you, look you in the eye, and see that you care. We call it the human touch. Whether you were born here or moved here really doesn't matter as far as we're concerned. You're from round here, and since 1905, folks like you have been calling folks like us for their auto, home, life, and business insurance. So come see us, or just give us a call, and we'll get you the best insurance protection possible at a real affordable price. We're Robinson & Stith Insurance, because when you really need help, you'll want somebody from round here.
Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? People in the community that love this country to protect individual liberty and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back again. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. We're back, and I think we're still on the budget. I wanted to add, if we've got the 8% pay raise, and again,
and the bonus.
And the bonus.
I'd like to comment on this, because there's seems to be an assumption that the more you pay somebody, the more the greater the quality of the work they're going to produce. That is not true. Or they're trying to keep people who are leaving the teaching profession because they believe the salaries. And I don't think that's the primary cause either. I think the primary cause for teachers leaving is because of the lack of discipline in the schools, some of the all the administrative hassles they have to go through. And that would be interesting to see a real complete survey of why are the teachers leaving? Why could we that? I doubt whether it's because if you give them 8% more pay, they're going to be satisfied with the job and so on and so forth. And so I think that needs to be done before they just dump money into it and assume it's going to solve the problem.
You know, along with that, Alan, we don't see the current administrators backing the teachers. I don't think we see that. I think the teachers are left there out there.
Yeah, I don't.
Well, they've got a huge union, the NEA. Why do they need the administrators?
I thought the state of North Carolina didn't have a teachers union.
It's a quasi union.
It's nationwide.
Not a official union.
Yeah.
Because what I was going to throw in is, at a budget level, you don't really get much insight into where the money is going. Meaning, once it gets into the hands of the administrators, it goes to unfunded mandates that they're doing for different programs. It goes to administrative services. It goes to unions, if they're there. It goes to everything but the teachers. So,
that's right.
You know, that is a big problem. It's not just, you know, are the teachers going to perform because of the pay? It's are they even going to get the pay you think they're going to get by the budget line?
And as we also see every year when they put that school bus out there asking for paper and pencils and whatever else, that the schools are not funding the materials that are needed.
Yeah, I mean, we just moved down here, not just, but we moved down here from New Jersey. And you want to talk about a money dump in the whole school system there, because you're specifically the cities of Newark and the cities of Camden prove that you can't throw money to solve the problem. They just keep getting more and more problems, less and less education, and more money.
And I think part of it is, but as it's the easy thing to do, If you're a legislator and you have access to more money, you say, "Well, here's a problem. We'll just
no, it gets your vote. It gets your votes.
We'll solve the problem." Yeah, it gets your teacher vote. But the issue, the in my opinion, the amount that a teacher gets paid should be related directly to how effective they are at teaching.
Well, they they'll fight that tooth and nail. That's
why we have to do it. They'll fight. But if somebody's coming in and we know the education, we know the achievement level of all their students, right? They're starting a group, comes into the fourth grade, we know what their achievement level is from when they left the third grade.
Yeah.
So then we could evaluate the teacher on how well they advance the educational achievement of those students.
Which is exactly what the unions fight.
Well, that's they don't want accountability, but that's what we need.
Well, and I think it's not only the unions, the administrators at these local schools don't want to do that either, because they don't want to hurt people's feelings and that sort of stuff.
Shouldn't be their choice.
But I understand. And I will say that this money, when they say 8% raise for the teachers, it doesn't get lost in the administrative thing. It does go towards those salaries. It's line item to that.
But when we look at 8%, how many private industry jobs would you get an 8% increase in? I know when you were working, Glenn, you never got an 8% raise, ever.
What does that say about Glenn?
Oh, I guess. Well,
commenting about his work performance?
Yeah, now you're embarrassing your husband.
But I'm saying that half of the North Carolina state budget goes towards education. That includes community colleges and the state college system, as well as the public education. I do know from personal experience that the Pink Palace in Raleigh, the DPI building, last time that we were up there, was less than half occupied. I would say that locally in our county, I think administratively we are top heavy, and I think we continue to be top heavy, not just on the salary, but in the positions. I know in other states they handle their school boards differently, and not every school is under the same management system, but our school boards historically have had a history of not using the money appropriately or where it was supposed to go when it was given, and continually are going back to the county commissioners asking for more money. It's been a fight as long as I've lived here.
Well, the average per student cost for public education is now over $13,000 per year.
Per student per year.
Above 13,000. And the thing is, there are more and more students leaving the public school system. And because of this, the parents are dissatisfied. They did a survey back in January, and they found that 53% of these were, they surveyed 700 registered voters, all parties, unaffiliated, Democrats, Republicans. 53% of them were dissatisfied with the K-12 public schools in North Carolina. So we got a system where 53% of the people are dissatisfied, and we're going to dump more money and pay the teachers more.
But you know, in
what's the logic in that?
In looking at the 13,000, I don't know how easy it is. Well, I do know it's not easy. How would you break out the cost of facilities versus the cost of things like sports versus the things like administration from the actual student teacher pay scale?
Well,
and again, do we have books for everybody? What do we have? What don't we have?
I think you would have to add all of that together, Bob, not break it out.
Well, you got to break it out to find out where it's getting wasted.
Well, at the last county commissioners meeting, the school board did present their budget, and they the bad news is they need $3.5 million more dollars for something, and I think the community college needed $5 million and something more. That's probably not exact.
Is that the Craven County?
Yes.
Okay.
But
that one.
They The issues that they brought up that are positive is they are considering closing down an elementary school that's creating a lot of controversy because it's a historical site. But when you look at the number of students that have left the system, part of it is because of homeschooling, and I think that that was the only blessing of COVID, was that parents got a look at what was actually happening in schools. And I want to take that comment back to the fact that education was better across the country before the federal government got involved with the Department of Education.
Well, it's homeschooling, and it's also the Opportunity Scholarship Program, which has expanded the number of students in private schools because this it's an option now for parents where they couldn't afford it before. But still, like you said, the homeschooling population in North Carolina is 165,000. That's the biggest group besides public school. There's more homeschoolers than there are private school kids in private school or charter schools. But they are not eligible for the Opportunity Scholarship Program. And in fact, Governor Stein, he came out and said he wanted to increase the pay for teachers, but he also wants to take money out of the Opportunity Scholarship Program. He wants to defund most of that.
The good news is he's not a legislator, and that's already statute. So
yeah,
that's
he isn't now. But if Democrats get in, getting back to the election, if Democrats get in, then you could have.
That doesn't
Democrats
necessarily do. Stop them.
Well, we also watched over the last few years the requirement, again, with going back to the illegal immigrants, illegal whatever else, where we had to support with bilingual teachers, bilingual interpreters or whatever else that with it. Where do they come from? Where do they normally fit in the budget?
Yeah. If they're here illegally, they shouldn't be allowed to go to school at all. Why are we letting illegal kids go to school here?
Because our North Carolina Constitution states that every child is due a fair and free public education. It doesn't say every citizen. It says every child.
And that not was written.
Not only that, but the Supreme Court ruled in a Texas case back in late 70s or early 80s, that the local property owners were responsible for funding schools for illegals.
Yeah, well, things can be changed. If that's what the Constitution says, maybe the Constitution in North Carolina needs to be revised. Maybe it was when it was written, we didn't have this flood of all these illegals.
That's true about so many different things. Look at birth rights.
It's a different environment.
In the 14th Amendment, there was no, in their wildest dreams, the idea of what is happening right now and having literal, birthing vacations where people come over just to have the child in the country.
Go back.
The SAVE Act would help alleviate a lot of those financial consequences.
If we can get past Thune, yes.
Yeah, he's already shelved it.
Again, he needs gone.
That's what the paper says.
He needs to be shelved.
Yeah. Be careful what you say. You might find yourself on a seashell sandy beach.
It's all right.
You might
me.
Get a call from the Secret Service.
Yeah.
We still have the Second Amendment.
And by the way, come June 30th, that arraignment's going to happen in New Bern. By the way, so.
What arraignment?
Comey.
Oh.
That's going to be interesting.
So has a judge been assigned to that case?
I don't know. Don't know yet.
Okay, that'll be fun to watch. It'll give the little New Bern some notoriety. But at the same side, I don't want a bunch of people coming down and deciding that it's really nice and they want to live here. keep those Washingtonian types up there.
I'll tell you what, folks, we're going to take a real early break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. And I think we'll be back in just a few minutes. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Welcome back again. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Pat, we're going to change hats and go to Iran.
Yeah, let's talk about Iran. I was listening to Clay and Buck driving in, and one of them said, Trump, you know, because Trump has unofficially ended the Iran war so that he can evade the 60-day time limit under the to kick in the War Powers Resolution Act. They're saying, well, because the midterms are coming up and people are crazy about the gas prices, that what he should do is leave the war finished and restart it after the midterms, which I think is an incredibly stupid idea because we're already hearing little bits and pieces. We don't get much coverage on what's actually going on in Iran because, you know, they still have a ton of fast boats that are continuing harrying harassing our blockade ships, our Navy ships, and also other attacking tankers in the straits. Mm-hmm. They have missiles left. They have a ton of drones left. So we haven't attacked and taken care of that. I don't know why we're not attacking the fast boats, which are out in the open.
Trust me, they're smart enough there that those boats, which are nothing more than a fast outboard boat with a 50 caliber on it. They're not going after the Navy ships because if they did...
No, they're doing swarm.
No, they're not. They're not. They're going after the merchant ships.
How do you know? Because that's what I read all the time.
Because I'm a retired naval officer.
I'm a retired Air Force officer, all right.
Because I'm a merchant marine officer as well, and I've got contacts in the merchant fleet.
So all that I read about swarm attacks is lies.
It is not happening to the naval ships. They will try to intimidate. They'll try to goad into us taking some action. But
that's harassing.
You know, they're not going after the Navy ships and firing at them and all that stuff. Might it happen on occasion? Possibly. But, again, the ships that have gone into the strait where all these things are occurring are... A few ships that have transited, three destroyers one time, two destroyers another, and the main fleet is out away so that they've got a buffer of time and safety so that they can detect things coming at them. They've got a layered defense between, you know, whether it be air from shore, air from the carriers,
I'm aware
all the
of that.
Capability of the naval vessels with their long arm reach. And the last thing they want to do is get involved with firing a, you know, harpoon missile at a small little thing. And you're spending millions of dollars for this thing, and it's not in there. Now, what it has happened is the merchant ships are afraid to transit the fleet. And it's not just the ships, it's the companies because of the investment, and it's the insurance companies because of the policies that they have and the payouts they would have. And all those things are what's holding them up from transiting the Straits. And you've got, you know, crews of maybe 20 to 30 people on each of those merchant ships out there who, you know, now they're also paying to resupply to get food to these people. You know, it's a hassle. You know, what the last thing we need to do is, you know, walk away from where we are. When you look at the investment that's been done in terms of getting the forces over there, all the resupply that's going on, all the transit that's happened in standing up the bases, all the, you know, logistics aircraft and everything that's all pre-positioned, stepping back from it is a huge, huge mistake, my opinion. Okay, in my opinion, this Operation Freedom needs to stand back up.
I agree.
There's no doubt in my tactical mind that, because I know when I was over there many, many years ago, you know, plans were made for how we would respond and what we would do. So things are in place. It's much more politically complicated now with the other Arab countries and the Chinese and the Russian supporter and all that sort of stuff. All that is now factored in there. And my understanding, I don't know it for a fact, is the reason that after this first successful transit in Project Freedom started, the reason it stopped was at the behest of Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. Because they were not informed. There were some concerns regarding their safety and their people's response from Iran. So they wanted it stopped until there were assurances in place, readiness is in place, and things that would allow it to continue. Do I know that for a fact? No.
No, you don't.
That's my understanding.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they said that the ceasefire was on life support, so.
Well, that's because of these constant attacks by the Iranians. And I've seen a bunch of videos on YouTube of the Navy ships fending off attacks from the Iranians, not only missile attacks, but torpedo attacks, fast swarm ships. And I don't believe that all of those are fake.
But we don't know who's in charge in Iran. We're still trying to push that.
No, but we know who's in charge of our Navy.
No, but there's no doubt in my mind that if we wanted to, we could, through the air power, both naval and shore, and, you know, the naval ships, et cetera, and if necessary, put a marg ashore at a specific point that would support things and make it useful that we would not, wouldn't be unlimited travel, but kind of similar to the 80s where we were doing the tanker wars and escorting things through. We could control that and make it happen. It would be costly. There's risk involved, but that could in fact be done.
Yeah, this started by saying, want to keep the ceasefire through the midterm. And some ideas of that, which is crazy because the biggest issue now is all about moving ships in and out of.
Well, there is no ceasefire. They continue to fire on us.
Well,
they're just pretending.
I don't think Trump would stop the blockade of Iran's ports.
I know, but the point is, if you're going to keep that strait closed for 6 months, this freedom movement has to happen, but the only point is, I think that's all crazy.
Yeah.
And we got to get that moving, and then we need to take kinetic action
to get this thing moving and solved.
I'm in favor of kinetic action.
I mean, there's no doubt in my mind when the destroyers transited the straits, there was the small boats, there were drones.
That's what I said.
Is up there. But that was in response to a specific action during the Project Freedom, which we could very easily control. It's not like it's happening all the time to the fleet that's out there.
Says you.
Well, my opinion.
Yeah, that's your opinion.
But I'm sort of kind of surprised that we did not, in the planning phase, knowing that this was likely to happen, that Iran, if we took out their missiles and so on, they would still have the capability of keeping that strait closed through these speedboats and the drones, whatever they're using, that we did not anticipate or have an answer to stop that so that they could not block it?
That we have that.
Well, then we should
That is not the commander's decision. He's got to get the approval from the policymakers that, you know, that's what they're going to do.
And I think a lot of the decisions made at this point, it's sad to say, are political decisions.
Well, that's why two weeks ago, you know, the CENTCOM commander went to the White House to give him a list of the options that are on the table. You know, it's not his purview to decide what he's going to do out of those options.
And Iran's had 47 years to do a crazy buildup.
And I'm going to change the direction that we're going totally with my next comment. Today, there were hearings, and it goes back to the politicization of everything. They were talking about the COVID, the origins of COVID, and they had a whistleblower, a CIA agent, come and was testifying. And it's the same thing. It's the optics. It's the optics of the war. It was the optics of COVID. Every decision that impacts we, the people, seems to be made based on someone's poll on how it's going to vote with the people instead of what's best for the country.
The hearing today that not a single Democrat attended.
Yeah, I heard that.
And here again, how is that not a political statement? Just in fact, and I think this is optics. I think Trump is in a no-win situation. I think no matter what he does, he's going to be crucified just because he's Trump.
I think he can win, and I think we're going to see things changing sooner than later. After we get out of it. He gets back from China.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of what we've been discussing, if you've ever listened to the commentators, meaning General Kellogg and General Keane, who are, you know, have been in those positions and understand all that stuff, we're rehashing the same thing. They're saying the same thing. But policymakers have to make the decision.
Well, I think Trump will make that decision.
I
don't think he's going to go this far and stop and let Iran recover and come out. And, you know, Iran wants reparations. They want to put a toll on the strait. What would stop them if we allow them to stop the ships going through? How are we going to stop them from charging a toll?
Well, it's an international strait. It's not just their strait.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
You've got two countries three countries on either side of that strait.
Yeah.
Okay. That said, Alan, that means politically we have to stop this war before the midterms, because politically, if it's not, and the conservatives lose in the midterms, everything that has been done so far will stop.
So here we are once again doing it alone. It's an international strait, UNCLOS, the United Nations Clause for the Law of the Sea, specifically addresses international straits, yet United Nations forces aren't stepping up to enforce that, aren't stepping up to enforce their laws. Our NATO allies are nowhere to be seen. You know, we're going it alone.
Other than Saudi Arabia and UAE.
Well, they have stepped up.
They've stepped up.
They've stepped up.
That's because they got shot at.
Well, you know, the British said they're thinking about sending one destroyer, which is currently off of Cyprus. And the French are sending an aircraft carrier and three frigates, which are currently in the Red Sea, but haven't gone over to the other side yet.
Yeah.
So we protect the world, we incur the costs, and we're still the bad guys.
But isn't part of
We've always been the bad guys.
Have to do with the fact that we were not properly prepared for this drone business, because drones have changed warfare in a lot of ways, and the weapons that we have for air defenses are very expensive. but I understand that they're working on what some kind of laser devices to
shoot
drones down.
Like one or two ships have those. It's called Odin, and what's the other one's name? I don't remember.
That's what I'm saying.
And they've also gotten another much cheaper device that's portable and on a pallet called Beekeeper or something like
that. Where, microwave.
Which is like, basically a few chain guns and its own radar system that they can put on a ship.
But until the Ukraine war started, drones were not what they are now in warfare.
We were major war policies and programs.
By the way, one of the quirks of the Russia-Ukraine war is that that's slowed down because Iran can't supply Russia with more drones.
All right, and the drones that we have, my understanding, are reverse engineered from what they found Iran supplying Ukraine with.
Folks, on that, we've got to end the show. Thanks for listening. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.